Accession number 15746, reel 2.
Mr. Evans, reel 2.
It was amidships. The guns were the secondary armament to the ship. They had a dual purpose. They could fight off. They could fight off sea targets or switch to high angle anti-aircraft. They were fitted both with close range aircraft sights, open sights, and a telescope for the service target.
Any other incidents you can think of relating to action in the war in HMS Neptune?
Those were the main incidents, and we got shook up, and oil was getting into the control centres, and we couldn't operate fully as a first-class frontline cruiser, so we were detached into the Indian Ocean to do patrols.
What did that involve?
Just patrolling, looking for the German armed raider was the sort of main thing, and they did fool us. It must have been a German submarine sent signals out from the Antarctic, the Kerguelen Islands, and it was Whaling Islands during the peacetime, but it made it look as if they'd set bases up in the old Whaling Islands. So we rushed down in tropical gear with no Arctic clothing of any kind. And while we were down there, the armed raiders let themselves loose and tackled the shipping in the Indian Ocean, where we should be there looking after them. But one of the tricks they employed.
So they successfully evaded you?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We circled Africa again, and made our way home after about 4 years, I'd say. 4 years away. And then the ship got a proper refit in Chatham. There was one incident coming up into Chatham. There was aircraft flying up. And somebody said, oh, it's one of ours, it's all right. But it was a jerry, and it sprayed the ship with bullets, and as it passed, and went, it just was sort of welcome home to Chatham. I went to a hospital there. I had to have a little operation.
Was that because of conditions at sea?
It could have been. I probably with diet, it was a sort of what do you get in your leg? Like abscess, an abscess. I had abscess diet, I should think. But I got treated like the war wounded. I got moved to Aylesbury in a military train after I'd had my operation in Chatham Naval Hospital.
Was it just one abscess, or did you have them all over?
No, just one big abscess in my groin.
Were you not fed very well?
Well, at sea, you do have to get tinned rations and things like that after a while, but we did feed pretty well. A lot of our time we were in South Africa, and we got fresh fruit and things like that now and again. But
did the sailors grumble about having been all those years at sea?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I remember one Christmas day, there's a saying in the Navy that you're two blocks, that's when you're fed up, you know, and the captain came round and there was two wooden rigging blocks hanging on the top of the down to the mess table. He got the hint, I think. Two blocks meet, like, they won't go any further, you see. When you pull on a rope and they meet, you're two blocks, you're up to there.
Did he seem angry about it?
Not really, no. Took a pinch of salt.
How did you feel you were treated in the Neptune?
Pretty good, under circumstances, yeah. It's quite a happy ship, but of course we're in a hard gang that we all swore we were never going to be promoted or anything like that. We're not going to look at anything like that. It's all altered later on, of course.
Why did you feel like that?
Well, it was showing off, really. The sailors are over there, you know.
Did you feel bolshy?
No, I didn't. We did have an incident when the war started. The ASDIC ratings were all mad anyhow. So. And one painted a black swastika on the side of the gun turret one night. And it was facing the senior ship, Captain Burnett, on the other cruiser. So they had to be hastily painted over and scrubbed out before the light came on. So
that was right at the declaration of war?
Just about in the week of the war starting, yeah. We were in Simonstown in South Africa then. Can't remember the ASDIC or anything. He was mad.
Why a swastika?
Well, it was being Hitler's thing, you see. I don't know, it was only fun, I think.
Were they sympathetic to the Germans?
No way at all.
Any other incidents in Neptune before we leave it?
Not really. Much.
Now, how did you come to leave Neptune and get your next ship?
Hospital, of course. I'd heard of a dodge where you could win yourself a shore job, and there was a course going. QO, that made you into sort of a bag carrier for an artificer. And I got myself a soft job in Scotland in Ardrossan. And we were converting trawlers, fish trawlers into gun harbour patrol boats, you know, sticking a gun on and going out to sea and testing them and turning them over to the Navy. And I was very happy in this job. And a young lady came along, wanted to marry me, pretty smart. And I wasn't for it, so volunteered to go back to sea again pretty sharp. And that's when I started getting all my promotions, because that's the only way I could lose the job, was to get promoted. And you had to pass exams. So I actually went from an able seaman to an acting petty officer. An able seaman to a leading seaman QR2, which was a second class gunner rate. I actually did that in 8 months. I was the leading seaman in a week, because there just happened to be a board examination board the week after at Adrossan, and I became a leading seaman in about a week, and I was a second class gunnery rating, passed for petty officer, and I actually was an acting petty officer in 8 months from the day I applied to go to sea. So that's moving. That's shifting. Because well, they were very short of them, you know, at that time in the war.
Is that how you got the posting to
Abdiel? Yeah. As a leading seaman, captain of the gun, B gun.
Where did you join this ship?
Heaven on Tyne.
What impression did the ship make on you?
Now, although it was covered in it was covered in cables and dockyard paraphernalia, but lying in the graving dock, the dry dock, it just looked like a greyhound. It was, you know, I got a distinct impression right away. Oh, I like this ship. It's a beauty. And obviously, it's one of the fastest ships we ever had. And it's a funny thing. I was only on it 12 months, but that's the ship that impressed me more all the time I was in the Navy. It's the one I liked, and that was it. It's a pity it didn't last much longer than it did.
How long were you at Heaven for?
About a month. They'd been lying there, being repaired. They'd lost a screw in the Andaman Islands. They'd lost a propeller. And being such huge, big propellers for the speed, they couldn't get it done abroad. They had to bring her home, get it done in Heaven. And then virtually just a few were on it during the refit, and then they put a new crew on it. Sent it out to sea again.
Did the dockyard men work hard on the ship?
Oh, yes. Oh, they were going flat out. Flat out on it. There is a history that when she was built from the Isle of Wight, that her first operation, there were actually civilian workers still working on her. I mean, she went on the first operation. It was clogging up the breast U-boat pens, of course, which was a favourite target. Used to go there often. Breast and Laurier and there's a Bay of Biscay where the U-boat pens were continually, nearly every night, going there.
Then what duties did the ship have after its month at Heaven?
Straight into offensive action. It was went straight at it. Just couldn't get it out fast enough, you know.
Whereabouts?
We based on Milford Haven. And then the most convenient target, of course, was the U-boats. But we concentrated on helping the 8th Army. We went out Sicilian Narrows and the North African coast.
What job was it doing?
It was stopping. It had to stop the supplies being shipped across from the mainland, from Italy mainland, and over to North Africa. The petrol, Rommel's petrol and food and soldiers' replacements had to come across, and we just had to get in and stop them going over.
How did it do that?
Mining, going under cover of darkness, high speed. It was a huge success.
Can you describe how it did the mine laying?
fast, high speed first. Of course, it was dominated by the Axis air powers, the Central Mediterranean. You could normal units of the Navy were banned in those days. They just couldn't get through. Just couldn't get through. But we were so fast, we could do it under cover of darkness. And go at a great speed first, then reduce about 25 knots to drop them and get the hell out of it again as soon as you put them in position and before daylight come and get back. We had a set plan. We'd Milford Haven, drop Malta area in the Narrows, then to a base in Israel. Pick a load up, drop, and by that time HMS Adventure would bring us a load out to Iran. And reload off her, back, Israel, back, empty the Adventure, through to Israel. Adventure would set home for another load. We'd go to Israel, drop the load, follow the Adventure and be back probably before or into Milford Haven. Possibly the same time. It's just a fantastic speed that you could go.
What was its top speed that you experienced?
I think we did say 41 knots one day. We did 41, which is fantastic. It's something like 50 mile an hour on the road for a ship, a full size ship, to be doing a speed like that. But Yanks just didn't believe it. The ship used to come on the plot and disappear in a couple of hours' time. They didn't believe there'd been a ship there at all.
What did the ship feel like when it was going at 41 knots?
Now, she was designed that she could do about 31 knots without vibration of any kind. It was that beautiful engines and the design of the thing. And then she used to vibrate after, a slight vibration through the ship after higher speeds. But up to 31 knots, smooth as the Isle of Man packet.
But at 41 knots, did it feel as though it was being shaken to pieces?
No, not unduly. No. Give you the feeling she could go faster if it opened the safety valves up and you had to get out of somewhere. I think we'd go even faster than that.
Did you have anything to do with laying the mines?
No. I was purely on the on the guns. Got some photos there, but I don't know if it...
We can look at them afterwards.
Yeah.
What happened next to you in the Aberdeen?
Well, we... it eased up as the army were winning in North Africa. We eased up and got a bit of rest in Malta and a bit of swimming in and things. And then we helped with the invasion of Sicily by carrying all the important army, Air Force and Navy, C&Cs to the what we used to. Let them have breakfast in Malta in the morning and we'd be off the beach yet in about an hour and a half after when they decided to go and have a look. We'd skip over and use this as a taxi, so. Yeah, and then we rested a bit again after, and then they come to capitulation of Italy. They wanted to capture Taranto as a base, as a logistic. But they didn't have aircraft to fly the paratroops. So they crammed them into a load of ships. And we had to go over and land the paratroops by sea the best way we could. Opposed or unopposed, we had to get them ashore and capture the harbour. So we'd have a port to supply the army when they're landing off the beaches. We'd have ships to go through and feed them. And that's when we come unstuck.
Can you take me through what you remember in detail about the loss of the Abdeel?
The loss, the actual loss of the ship, yes. I have written it, but I can't, which I'll let you have. But basically, we were unopposed when we got there. The cruisers were able to go alongside. But we, with us being a small unit, we were told to anchor out in the outer harbour. And the two battleships that were screening, they decided not to anchor, and they kept out at sea. And the one of the battleships, Anson or Howe, I can't remember. Yeah, I've got it here. King George V ordered us to take her berth. So instead of going to our original anchorage, we went to her berth, and without us knowing there, the German torpedo boats had left and strayed some mines over the bottom of the harbour to try and stop the Italian fleet leaving. And we anchored over one. Now, that was all right. We were protected by the acoustic arrangements. But the paratroop officers couldn't go to sleep. They wanted a nap before we moved, and they asked for the mortar, the degaussing mortar, to be switched off because it was keeping them awake. And the captain said, yes, all right, we were in the outer harbour. He thought it would be all right. And he virtually, with the switching of the degaussing mortar off, was like a switch to blow the ship up, in effect. That's what's been deduced, what really happened. So as soon as they removed the protection against the acoustic mine by switching the motor off, it blew the Abdeel in half. Just went switch off like that, with great panic everywhere. You know?
What are your precise personal memories of the incident?
My own precise? Well, I couldn't get in my mess. I'd had some duties. I had to change some positions of some cranes for unloading the anti-tank guns and so forth. And I thought I'd have a nap in my mess, but it was full of senior sergeants and of the paras beside our own normal people. I decided to go sleep on the gun deck. I thought, well, it might be called action stations at any time and I'd be there ready, you see. And I thought I'd have a sleep on the deck. And as a couple of minutes of going into have a nap, the ship blew up and just felt it go up underneath me. just broke into in the dark. Awful lot of screaming and noise and all that. And yeah.
What did you realise what had happened?
Oh yes, yes, yes. And I disobeyed an order. There was a gunner called Mr. Witter, and he was shouting in the dark that seamen had to go below and close the watertight doors. Well, with such small hatches, and men were streaming upwards to escape for their lives, you couldn't get down against the flow of men coming up. So I thought I'd let go of one of the Carly rifloats, the big rafts on the side of the gun deck, and I started, got my knife out to slash the mousing off the slip and knock it off, and it was wired up with wire. I couldn't cut it with my knife, you see. So I had to unscrew it against the lay of the wire. There's like a bottle. And I had to unscrew it right out of the bottle to get it apart. And I managed it and launched one life raft. Got it in the water. Then I noticed there was no orders coming from the bridge at all, which was immediately above my gun position. I thought of going up and have a look, see if they were all right. So I clambered up on the outside over a gun shelter and the lookout position places. And it was deserted, bridge absolutely deserted. Everybody had gone, left and abandoned the place. And I noticed the captain's binoculars, so I grabbed them and put those around my neck and went back down the way I was. And by then the ship was settling down and nearly gone. And I went to the forecastle, which the last bit was sticking out of the water. And I met a young army officer there, para-officer. We had a bit of a joke, an argument who was going to be last off, and a whaleboat come into sight in the dark from HMS Penelope. So we just dived in the water and splashed over and got picked up and put in the whaler. Got taken to the HMS Penelope.
Did you see anything of the casualties?
Not particularly, no. And I just heard them shouting and screaming. You know. The most noise was the air coming out of the compartment, the water, seawater would be coming in, and there was a lot of hissing and steam noises, you know, coming out. Some shouts and cries and one or two other things.
What condition were you in by the time you got ashore?
Very, very good. Very, very good. Well, we actually got taken to a ship and got washed and a bath and some sort of overalls or some sort of bit of clothing, warm clothing given to us.